So welcome to another podcast, Pell Droid. My name's Russell, and I'm on my own this time. They've all deserted me, but fortunately, by the powers of Skype, I'm joined by Leon. How are you? You all right?
Yeah, good, thanks. You?
Yeah, I'm very well. You enjoyed the Northern Ireland game? Because you were over for that, weren't you?
I did. It wasn't the best of games, but it was just great to be there, and it was just great to actually went along to the England-Holland game following week, and with something like four times as many people there, but it just wasn't the same kind of atmosphere that we're getting at Wales games at the Cardiff City Stadium now. So yeah, loved it.
Well done for taking one for the team by going to Wembley. you do it so we don't have to. We thought we'd get together simply just to kind of respond to the list that you did of, and it's been on the blog for about a week or so now, of Wales's sort of best, I'm going to say Anglos, I use the term with caution. I guess it's one we've used, you know, a lot down the years, but I suppose it has a certain sort of connotation with people with links to England, which isn't necessarily the case for all of these people. So I guess what we're sort of saying clunkily is non-Wales-born Welsh internationals.
Yeah, I think I gave it the title the best 10 Wales players born outside Wales, just because in some cases I'm really not sure kind of how Anglo people are, so I didn't really want to call someone like, say, Robert Earnshaw an Anglo, because as far as I'm aware he didn't live in England until he signed for West Brom, because he was in Africa and then he moved to Wales. So most of them, I guess, you could term as Anglos.
Yeah, it's a term, I suppose, that's a little bit loaded. And I guess by the laws of averages and the numbers involved, most of the people we've capped born outside of Wales have been born in England. I mean, that's, you know, would stand to reason, I suppose. But yeah, and I thought it also kind of conjures up sort of assumptions about people's identity and things, which I would never want to do with anybody any more than I would want them to do about myself. So it's not very good for trying to promote it on Twitter, though, isn't it? Sort of referring to the 10 best Wales players born outside Wales. It uses up too many characters, and hence the attraction of the term Angler, which uses far fewer. But wherever I did use it, I did put it into inverted commas, and hopefully no offence was caused, because none was intended. But you put the list out. It did encourage a little bit of interaction, actually. Certainly the lack of Sam Ricketts in your list caused a few people some anger, perhaps. I don't know.
Well, I did think about Ricketts. Yeah, he was there in my thinking. Would have been kind of lower down, maybe top 15 or so. I think he would have made it in there. But my thinking with Ricketts was that even though he won over 50 caps for Wales, I couldn't really think of any really big, important, competitive games where he'd played well and we'd won. And, for everyone else on the list, I could think of at least one big game where they'd contributed well. And Ricketts, you know, he had good games for Wales. And the game that stood out most for me was the 3-0 over Scotland under Toshack, actually. He did play up in Glasgow when we won 2-1 a few years ago. I was there for that game. For that game, he lost Grant Hanley for the Scottish goal at the end of the first half. My memory of him in that game is actually making a mistake. I like him as a pundit as well. I think he talks well, and obviously it really did mean a lot to him to play for Wales. But I just didn't think he had enough kind of standout performances in important games to justify inclusion in a top 10 anyway.
If it's that kind of, you know, game-changing, important players, is it longevity, is it passion, is it... And different people will be motivated by different things, I suppose, and different players will appeal to different people because of different, you know, on different grounds. You know, I've said this any number of times. You know, I adored Jason Kumas when he was playing for Wales. But if somebody sort of said, you know, did he have the passion and the desire for Wales, or did he show that, I'd find it very, very difficult to argue that he did. So for certain players as well, I tend to find myself almost picking and choosing the criteria and the metrics. And I will hold my hand up if that is inconsistent, if it's contradictory, even. It's just the way it is sometimes. And I've kind of found in my list here that I'm kind of flitting back and forth, but there's commitment is something I kind of value and appreciate. So that kind of comes through with a couple of my choices. But so we'll talk through yours. As I said, yours has been up there, and I'll reply, and I can hopefully try to sort of whip your list into a bit of shape, frankly. And Gareth's not here. Gareth had to drop out sort of at the last minute. He couldn't make it tonight, and I've seen his list as well, and it's rubbish as well. So we're frankly better off from not hearing that one. And I think I saw he'd included Gareth Taylor, and that is quite clearly nepotism of the highest order on some sort of mnemonic grounds, because they share the same name. Having said that, had a Russell Todd ever played for Wales, I probably would have been tempted to pick him in this list as well. So I could be being deeply hypocritical here.
I was going to say the thing about Leon Gian, actually, because of the name Leon. I always looked out for him and thought, you know, I mean, he was very highly rated as a youngster. They just kind of, his career went absolutely nowhere.
Yeah.
But yeah,
he was. I mean, he's one of those players. It's like the, you know, the best player you never saw, sort of thing. He was yes, he was very gifted, but troubled. But there we go. Okay, I'm just going to check out a couple of names that haven't made it into my top 10. Two of which have made it into yours. That's Andy King and Eric Young. And it kind of pained me, to be honest. I did kind of want to get Eric Young in there, but I'm afraid he's not made it. And this might make you chuckle. And on another day, I'd probably think I was being an absolute lunatic. I was trying really hard to get Darren Barnard in there for two simple reasons. He was really good in the home leg against Russia in the playoffs, where I thought he was
the home leg. Really,
I thought he was excellent that night.
I thought he gave away the foul for the Russian.
Well, yeah, but
he,
you know, players give fouls away, but I thought by and large he was excellent that night. Gary Speed was pretty good as well, admittedly, but I thought Barnard was excellent. And he did put in that cross for Craig Bellamy's goal in Copenhagen.
That was a great cross.
And I can remember him sort of just being a trier. I'll be honest, there's not a huge amount else I can remember, which is probably why he hasn't quite made it. But I thought I'd try and sort of put some names in there just to create some debate and discussion as well, for that matter. So yeah, so sorry, Darren, you haven't made it. Nor's Andy King, because to be honest, I just don't think he's ever done anything of much sort of consequence, really. The last couple of games, notwithstanding.
Just go back to Darren Barnard a minute. If you haven't seen it, YouTube is goal for Barnsley against Huddersfield in about 1998.
I know the one you're talking about.
It is one of the best goals you'll ever see. It's an absolutely stunning volley from about 25 yards out.
It's a volley, isn't it? That kind of comes across his body as well.
You remember it?
From memory, yeah. I've just had to knock the washing machine off. Sorry, brother. Highly professional, as ever. So Barnard's not made it, Young hasn't made it into my list, and nor has Andy King. I'll reveal my number 10 when you try to persuade me then that your number 10, who was Eric Young, should have made the list. Go.
All right. With Young, he sneaked in at 10, and I did consider a few other people for number 10. Including, actually, the only person who scored for Wales in a quarter-final. Do you know who that is?
The only person to score for Wales in a quarter-final. Well, we didn't score against Brazil, so you're talking Yugoslav, aren't you, in 70... what are we talking, 76?
Yeah.
Lost 2-0 out there, won all at home. I'm padding just to try to buy myself more time here. No, go on then. Hit me.
Ian Evans. Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a regular player at that time and a sort of key part of the team. Which I never saw him play, obviously, because that was before I was born. But I looked at his record to see if, you know, maybe he deserves inclusion. But he only won 13 caps. So I kind of had an unofficial rule with this list, which was everyone in the top 10 had to have won at least 20 caps. Young only won 21, in fact. So he just was in there on that basis. But really, this goes back to our kind of Year of Years podcast, and I just he was a a regular player in those two campaigns when we just missed out, just so close. See, that's a period of time which is fondly thought of by Wales fans of our kind of vintage. We're both late 30s, and the slightest mission qualified because he was a naturalised British citizen. I thought he was he gave it everything he had for Wales. He was a decent player. I don't think he was he was something of a battler. He was good in the air, good, useful for set pieces. He'd go up for set pieces. I think when we equalised against Romania, he wins a header in the box, which keeps it alive. And it's just kind of really because he was tied up with that sort of period of time we talked about for hours a few weeks ago. Yeah. We did the RF Years podcast.
He had a long professional career as well. I don't remember this, but you made the point in the blog. He didn't make his debut until he was 30, which is, yeah, it's obviously, very late. In the same games as Gary Speed and Paul Bowden.
Still waiting to see if he might get an England call-up, because, like I say, he wasn't in the slightest bit Welsh. And maybe it took to 30 years old. He'd won the FA Cup by then with Wimbledon. Maybe you thought, yeah, quite fancy international football. Wonder if Wales would take me, sort of thing. Maybe that's why it took so long, I don't know.
Yeah, I think he had that sort of cult hero sort of status, didn't he, because of the headband and the ninja nickname and things like that. But yeah, I think he's a fair shout, to be honest. Hasn't quite made it into mine. I toyed with the idea of Kit Simons, and then I thought, well, to be honest, if I can't justify Eric Young, then I'm not entirely sure I can justify Kit Simons, because I think they're sort of similar players. They were decent centre-halves, by no means great. We had better defenders available to us when both of those were playing. They, complemented the squad probably quite nicely. I do think back to Kit's possibly his only goal for us against Belarus in Union Park.
Yeah.
So kind of there's a sort of fondness there. But again, I struggle to think of any sort of games where he was some sort of titan at the back in the same way I can recall games. Huge games that James Collins has had, or Gabidon has had, or Coleman and Ratcliffe and centre backs like that. So yeah, no, he did make it. I went number 10. I went for Andy Johnson, and my logic being that we're going to discuss this, I'm sure, when we do the Huge Years podcast in the next sort of few weeks. If you look close enough to Hugh's reign, generally speaking, I don't think it stands up to scrutiny, and I can kind of justify that another time. But when we were on a bit of a run, and when we were, on the cusp of getting to 2004 Euros, it was a very settled side. Hughes was very loyal to those players, arguably, almost too loyal. I think it was harder to get out of that side than it was to get into it. But he knew what he wanted. We were organised. And people sort of talked about, Robbie Savage, being a heartbeat of that side. And he was conspicuous, obviously, for obvious hirsute reasons. And he'd run around a bit. But my argument always was that it was Mark Pembridge, and to a certain extent in certain key games, it was Andy Johnson that were actually allowing him to do that running around thing that he did. And I just remember Johnson in the away leg out in Russia. He also played, I think, in the Finland game out there. He was a really important component of that side. Very unfussy, very unflashy. And I used to think he used to contribute an awful lot and would get absolutely zero credit for it. And so I kind of sort of bonded with him a little bit, because I thought that was a bit unfair, because he was having to go in and do the dirty work, really, in the difficult sort of away games when Hughes wanted it to be even tighter. And he wasn't the most effusive and sort of attack-minded of coaches at the best of times, Hughes, obviously. So I've gone for Andy Johnson because I think he was very much unsung.
Yeah, I liked Andy Johnson. I saw his debut against Italy at Anfield, and he was excellent, actually, that game.
Yeah,
considering the quality of opposition he was up against, and I didn't really know anything about him before, and didn't know he had Welsh family or anything like that. And so he came in sort of quite last minute, hadn't played any friendlies or anything like that, and he started the game because the whole Robbie Savage shirt throwing incident.
Yeah.
I think Savage was due to start, and then Gould took him out of the team. Bizarrely. I'm sure we'll talk about that on the. When we get onto the Gould years, but Johnson. I remember him getting on the ball a lot. He didn't hide at all. He wanted the ball.
Yeah.
A neat, tidy, decent passer. He played under Hughes when we had people missing, didn't he? Generally, I think he wasn't so much like a first choice player if everyone was available, because he didn't play in the Italy game, the 2-1 in 2002, as far as
I
remember.
No, he didn't.
So he would, if I don't think he won 20 caps, so that maybe counted him out of being included in my list. But if he had won 20 caps, he certainly would have been pushing for inclusion.
I
think he retired too early as well. Maybe that's another thing. A bit like John Robinson, he went too early. He should have stuck around after Hughes went.
Yeah, he did. He basically retired. He, all intents and purposes, he finished with Wales after the Russia games.
Exactly.
He did come on at half time in the friendly against Latvia that we played, which was sort of like the start of the following season. So he'd hung around. He'd had been injured, and he kind of hung around for a bit. He came on at half time, but then he retired very soon after it. And I do agree with you on that point. And I won't try to argue against that. But I prefer to think of him in that sort of. That very much sort of unheralded, unsung role, and I think he was actually a quite an important piece in that sort of jigsaw, then, as it were, or under Hughes on that run in sort of 2002-03. Anyway, go on. Number nine, he's not managed to make my list, as I've already said. You've gone for Andy King.
Well, yeah, I did have reservations about putting him in, to be honest, because I think I wrote something like, "We're really yet to see the best of Andy King." For Wales, for a goal-scoring midfielder who's the highest goal-scoring midfielder Leicester City have ever had, two goals in 30-odd caps is a disappointing international record. It's funny with King, he's kind of like, just when you think he's going to have a breakthrough game for Wales, like I was thinking the Cyprus game at home, maybe this is the game, because he was excellent in that first half. Then something happens, like he gets sent off in the first minute of the second half. We think, this guy's frustrating. He's got talent. He can score goals. He's playing semi regularly for a team who are more than likely going to win the Premier League. So you've got to be a good player if you to pick up a Premier League winners' medal. I just think for Wales. Hopefully there's more to come from him. You know, he's not so old. I don't know, is he 26, 27? So there's maybe got another decade in him. He's not a particularly quick player as well, so he's not likely to sort of burn out in his early 30s. Maybe we'll see more from him. I hope we do. But I think what went in his favour is that he did play quite a few games in our recent campaign, and we've qualified. And you have to kind of look at that as success for a Wales player, because there are so many Wales players who haven't qualified.
Yeah. No, that's fair enough. I did consider him. I thought it might have ended up being a bit top heavy with sort of current players, though. So I wanted to kind of just rein it back in a little bit. My number nine is I've gone back and I had to kind of, and I don't really remember this plan. I had to kind of just double check it with somebody. And I've gone for Paul Price.
Yeah.
Born in St Albans in Hertfordshire, so Wikipedia tells me. Primarily remembered for a decade at Luton. He played for Spurs, he played for Swansea, did a little bit of spent a bit of time in North America as well. He won the cup with Spurs in 1982. And 25 caps, only one goal, but he played for 4 years, and that's quite a lot of caps in that short period of time.
He was captain as well for a couple of games when people were missing as well.
Yeah. And I've had to sort of take it on authority that he was, he was quite a good defender. I thought, well, when you look at the number of players who we've brought in, who aren't, qualified through parents or grandparents or passports, whatever it is, there's an awful lot that only get, two or three, a handful of caps. In fact, you know, the general rule is that players will play half a dozen times or thereabouts and drift back into obscurity, which I think, to be fair, reflects well on the likes of Vokes and Andy King, because they have got a lot of caps. If you roll it back into the 70s, when the rule was still fairly, and into the early 80s, when the rule was still fairly new, I suppose, and novel, I think it came in about 1971, 72, that you could qualify through where your parents were born.
Trevor Hockey was the first one in 71.
Yes.
Wales.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a handful. Dave Roberts was another centre-back, again, was highly rated. Like John Phillips is another one. So there were several played in the 70s. But, sort of just ran it past a couple of people. And I'd heard, sort of read some decent things about Paul Price, and somebody sort of said, yeah, he was a good player. So I thought, well, try to put a bit of credit in the way of some of the older... the older players, not to be sort of too top heavy with recent players. I've put him at number 9.
What year was his last cap, by the way?
84. 80 to 84. So he was pretty much a fixture in the side for, you know, the 4 or 5 years that he was in the setup. So, you know, England obviously rated him, and if anybody knew what a decent centre half was about, it was going to be Mike England, I suppose. Yeah. So at number 8 is where I've put Ricketts. I don't really disagree with what you were saying about him. I think we will look. I think as time goes by, I think we will look back. You know, he made his debut in Toshack's first game of his second spell, obviously, and he'd only just signed for Swansea. I can't remember now.
I think so. Yeah.
Qualifies via grandparents, and I suppose he must have had to pinch himself to believe he was, you know, playing international football, because you know it was really kind of like from non-league to international football really, really quickly. And he was
playing for the England C team, the semi-pro team, I think, when he was at
Telford.
Yeah.
We don't hold C caps against people, though, surely. we've all probably got an England C cap if we look hard enough. He was a trier. He didn't do anything that he didn't try anything he couldn't do. Was he the greatest fullback we've had? You know, nowhere near. But he was solid, dependable, and Toshack clearly rated him insofar as he could trust him. And because he was trying to blood so many young players, I think we will look back on the likes of Ricketts and go, well, do you know what? There were plenty of players who were, you know, again, and I don't want to kind of suggest that being born outside of Wales makes people any less Welsh or anything like that. But the reality was there are plenty of people who were born and raised within Wales who didn't want to play for Wales under Toshack for whatever reason. And I'm not going to get into that one. And Ricketts would just, you know, would turn up. And he kept turning up at the end of his career, because I think his caps are pretty much done with now. Even when he wasn't going to be getting many games, and he filled in at centre-back, and not with a huge amount of distinction, I'll concede. And you touch on the you've been at fault for Hanley's goal. And I think that's fair. But I think he was solid, he was dependable. And I don't think I ever remember him having an absolute shocker of a game. He was a sort of a solid 6 out of 10 performer. It would have been great if we'd have had a solid 8 out of 10 performer, but we didn't have them. So, yeah, and I think, to be fair, 50-odd caps is an achievement. There's plenty of good defenders for Wales over the year that failed to get to that number. Danny Gabardon's one. James Collins is still trying to get there. So, yeah, I've got a bit of time for Sam Ricketts. Yeah.
Ricketts won more caps for Wales than Danny Gabardon. It's amazing, really, considering their sort of relative levels of ability. But yeah, I like Ricketts. If I'd been in the top 15, he would have definitely made it in the.
Go on then. So you're number 8.
Maybe his best. If you want to see Ricketts at his best for Wales, have a look at the David Edwards goal against Scotland.
Absolutely.
In 2009, and his play down the right hand side is excellent there. Really. Quality fullback play.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And that's the first thing that comes to mind when I think of Ricketts for Wales, actually.
And you got an insight in that game as to, you know, if you surrounded him with players, you know, younger players who, you know, clearly had, you know, great ability, who could, you know, keep possession well, rather than the players he was surrounded by when he was making his debut with the likes of, you know, David Partridge and Carl Robinson and Carl Fletcher. You know, he I think he got better and more effective a player when he had better players around him. And don't forget, you know, he had a decent sort of career in the Premier League and in the Championship as well. So, you know, he wasn't a useless player by any means. I think there were still some issues because he was playing for Swansea and on the part of some fans, you know, within the Welsh following, which, you know, is always a shame. But, yeah, he always seemed to kind of have to justify himself more than other players. And again, that I've always tended to warm to people who've had to do that, to be perfectly honest, with one or two exceptions, Danny Collins being one, who's nowhere near this list. let's rattle around. We've only got to number eight. Your number eight was Kenny Jackett, who I don't really remember, if I'm absolutely honest with you.
Yeah, I saw him play a few times for Wales, but he wasn't really a standout player. But he was a good player, the part of a really good Watford team. I think he spent his entire playing career at Watford, actually, his hometown. His father was from Swansea and moved to, he was a professional footballer himself, he moved to Watford to play for the club. And yeah, it was kind of reputation and looking at what he achieved as a player. He was part of that Watford era under Graham Taylor, and he played left back, or he could play in midfield, but he played mainly at left back, I think, for Wales when I first started games in mid 80s. He was a regular player as part of a team which really narrowly missed out on qualification in 84, 86 and 88, and he played in some big games, played in the 3-0 over Spain in 85, the 1-0 win over Scotland at Hampden a few weeks before that. He was unlucky, he had to finish playing at the age of 28 in 1990, so if he hadn't had injury problems, he probably would have been still playing under Terry Orath in the early 90s, you'd have thought. I think he went 31 caps in the sort of 5 or 6 years that he did play. So that shows that he was a first choice pick when he was fit.
Yeah, he's a highly regarded player, and I think you're probably right. He would have been a staple in that side under Yarath in the early 90s. I just don't really remember much of him. He's one of those players that just hasn't kind of lasted in my memory. But I think that's probably fair.
He was finished by 1990, so
yeah.
Did have to finish very early, 28 years old, which was more common even 20, 30 years ago, that players would be forced into retirement in their 20s through injury. I mean, I know it still happens now occasionally, but not as often as it used to. If you look at people like Kenny Jackett, Norman Whiteside, there's countless examples of players who really were playing at the top level who were forced into early retirement.
No, he's not made it into mine, and I'm wondering now, the more you talk about him, possibly I'm wrong on that count. But anyway, we've got the same at number seven, and that's Dave Edwards.
You've gone for Edwards at seven too, yeah?
Yeah. Big fan of Dave Edwards. I think it's great that he's fit again. He played, albeit very briefly, for Wolves the other day. And I think that's terrific. And I think it does pose us a few headaches as fans, and probably for Coleman as well, as to what his midfield options are going to be for the Euros. But it's great to have him back, because I think he's a goal threat, and I think, you know, we are, whether we like to admit it or not, over reliant on one or two players to score goals, and I think he's got that in him, as he showed against Cyprus, albeit it was unfairly ruled out. And I've just got a massive amount of time for him. Again, as he showed in the qualifiers, he will do you a job almost anywhere in midfield. Well, certainly anywhere in midfield he'll do a job. And if we're in an injury crisis, I'd be quite happy to have him shoved up front. I don't think, frankly, we could do that much worse than him, to be honest. I've got a huge amount of time for him.
His goal scoring record can fit favourably with Hamad Sukarno or Simon Church, for example.
Well, of course he does.
Yeah,
and his reputation amongst Wolves fans is that he's a scorer of important goals, and I think with Luton as well, he's a scorer of important goals. His goals will win you points. And I know Robson Kanu is criticised, and he's my number six, and he's your number six, actually. He's criticised for his sort of relatively poor goal-scoring record, but his goals have been important ones, and there is something to be said for that. I mean, you can have a flat-track bully sort of equivalent in football who's, you know, happy to score goals in friendlies and against the weaker opposition, but, you know, you need players to score when it counts. Yeah, exactly. I don't think that's unfair. Robson Kanu has scored two important goals, and yeah, as I said, he's at number six, the same as you. And I can see him ending up higher once his career is finished in these sort of lists.
It's quite funny, doing the list, I thought, is this a bit kind of too top heavy with players who are current players. So, you know, I've got Robson, Kanu, Edwards, and Vokes all sort of together, 7 and 6 and 5, I think. But my thinking was that these players have taken part and contributed to us qualifying for a tournament, which is what we've been waiting decades for. That absolutely sort of goes in their favour, that they've really achieved.
I agree, and I think, you know, there's no higher honour for these players than to be included in these lists, actually. We agree on number 5 as well. This is going to get a bit tedious now. I don't think there's a huge amount of dissent on my part from your original list here, but to be honest. But number 5, we've gone for Sam Vokes. And I hadn't picked up on this until you'd said it in the blog. He is the highest scoring non-Welsh-born player that we've ever had.
Highest scoring English-born player.
Ah, yes. Sorry, of course. Yeah. But only one of those goals has been in the last 3 years. And, of course, he's had his injury problems. And I think it's fair to say a lot of fans are having a bit of a downer on him at the moment, as the way these things go. When things are going for you, you're a world beater. When they're not, then everyone's on your back, I suppose. And I'll hold my hands up there. I've been a bit critical of him myself over these last 2 or 3 games. But he's only 26.
Absolutely. He's young. And he's not a particularly quick player. So you'd think, as long as his injury problems don't keep him out for too long, he's someone who could still play for another decade for Wales. Yeah, there's this kind of feeling that perhaps we might have already seen the best of him for Wales when he was a teenager, which would be a real shame.
Yes.
I hope not. And I think even though he could have missed some chances in the game, that Iceland friendly game when he scored a few years ago, that was the one game that I was talking about where he has scored in the past 3 years. We kind of saw there what a kind of fit in form Sam Vokes, who was heading for promotion with Burnley at that time and was scoring goal after goal. We saw a glimpse of what a Vokes, Robson, Kanu, Bale front line might be capable of. We scored 3 goals in that game, and we very rarely score 3 goals in a game. And then a few weeks after that, he got injured, and it took him quite a while to get back. But he does seem in good form for his club, at least. I think he's got 14 goals for Burnley this season. They look like they could well go up. So maybe, you know, we'll see Sam Vokes playing regularly in the Premier League next season, which he hasn't had a chance to do yet so far in his career, and we might see the best of Vokes. I can't imagine him making much impact in the Euros based on his recent Wales appearances, but I do think he will almost certainly be in the squad.
No, I agree. I think he will be there. Robson Kanu, I think, is the first choice for that loan role. It does depend on him hopefully having a run of games before the end of the season as well. But I don't think the likes of Lawrence or Church have done enough to jump ahead of Vokes in the pecking order. I think he is the sort of second choice behind Robson Kanu. But it would be just great to see him playing back with a bit more of a smile on his face for Wales, because he has struggled. But you're right. I mean, you know, ideally though, you know, he'd carry on scoring goals as he is for Burnley, as he did the year they went up last time. And there's not many other players at his level in the league who are scoring that many. Any Welsh players now who are scoring that many and that frequently. You know, Bradshaw is, but he's playing at a level below. So, yeah, you know, he is still important for us. Okay, we slightly disagree on these ones. At number 4, I've gone for Earnshaw. And I was inclined, he started much higher on my list, and he kept kind of, he slipped down a couple of things. And I cannot get over the fact that I think for me his career for Wales fizzled out, and he, you know, I said this in a blog when he retired from Wales duty back 2014 or early 2015. Whenever he was playing, really for the last 5, 6, 7 years, he was playing in meaningless end of season friendlies. He was playing in that you know, Celtic Nations horror of a tournament, and he wasn't scoring goals that mattered, you know. And that's not to say that you know, he didn't care. He was still turning up. I honestly think if he was still playing, he'd and Coleman wanted him, he'd still be crisscrossing the Atlantic, whether he was playing in Canada or America or Israel or wherever he was, trying to get games. He was still turning up, and I'd imagine he probably still would do if he was in the running, because he, you know, he clearly absolutely adored playing for Wales, and that's why he's high up on the list. I mean, I put him at number four, but when you think of the ratio he had after about 15 to 20 caps, goal to cap ratio, you know, Ian Rush was sort of saying this guy could take my record away, and yeah, he didn't get anywhere near. And I find his career a bit disappointing for us, and that's kind of harsh, because clearly it's better than a lot of players. And if you look at his caps and you look at his goals, he's up there amongst the all time greats. But I just think it could have been so much more and so much better.
I can't disagree with any of that, really, especially considering how good his first 3 years or so were for Wales, how good his debut was against Germany as well. It's partly that managers didn't seem to trust him, and he kind of fell out of favour because of his kind of striker fell out of fashion, really. That sort of little goal poacher who doesn't hold the ball up particularly well. Even at club level, you know, he scoring goal after goal for West Brom to sort of help keep them up. But I just remember like Brian Robson criticising him after every single game. He'd go and score goals, but then he'd just say, "Oh, and his hold up play wasn't good enough. We need more from him." He's a bit of a throwback in a way. You know, I remember even in the 80s as a kid, there were plenty of strikers around who just scored goals. And that's all they seem to do. You need more these days, it seems.
And not only that, and with the exception of his spell at Derby, which was pretty much a disaster, but then Derby were absolutely shocking through those couple of seasons, he scored lots of goals everywhere. And that's the frustration, is that he just couldn't sort of turn it on. But you're right, people wouldn't trust him. You know, Speed didn't pick him, Toshack didn't pick him, Coleman didn't pick him, really, if we're honest, other than the odd game here and there. And I think that does reflect the wider trend tactically, and in terms of formation, I think you're right there. I think the big man, little man sort of two up front combination was no longer fashionable. It meant that we didn't really see the best of him. I had Earnshaw at four, you had him at three, where you had John Robinson, who is my four. Justify me, John Robinson, then.
You know what, if I'm totally honest, after writing the list, I'm like, does this guy deserve to be up so high, considering that he only won 30 caps? The thing that bugs me about Robinson is that he quit too early. He really, we missed him, I think. In 2003, he quit in 2002, and then in 2003, when we had some injuries and suspensions, results really dipped. Hughes was bringing in the likes of John Oster, Carl Robinson,
Paul Trollope, Paul Evans.
Oh, Paul Evans. Well, yeah, I mean, that was a bit later, wasn't it? But, like, during the campaign to try and qualify for the European Championships, would we have been better off if John Robinson had been available for Wales? Absolutely, we would have been, because he was a quality player who was a goal threat, who ran away, he got stuck in. Real fans' favourite because of his kind of style of play, I think. He was all action. I really enjoyed watching him play, and I remember when he announced his retirement just before the Euro 2004 campaign, I was absolutely gutted. Mm. I was like, why does he want to do this now when he could well be playing? Surely you can see this is a good team. We've got a chance of competing, and he might well play in the Euros. Just stick around for a couple of years.
I can remember you finished, and I'm thinking, well, why the hell do you want to do that? Because you're absolutely adored by the fans. I mean, he was a real cult hero. Was pretty much a first choice pick, but his career didn't really kind of last that much longer.
He went to Cardiff though.
Yeah.
Roughly that time, and I think he did play pretty well in the Championship for Cardiff. And there was some talk about him possibly coming back because he'd become a fan's favourite at Cardiff as well, and people saying, "Come on, come back and play for Wales."
He left. He left, I think, to do with illness. One of his parents, I forget the circumstances, but he returned back to, because he's from the sort of southeast, isn't he? He's from sort of Kent or sort of Gillingham type way, or Brighton, somewhere down that way. I think he's where.
I'm not really really sure, because I mean, he was born in Rhodesia, as it was.
I've called it Wikipedia Sussex. I knew it was that sort of south coast, southeast. So I think he wanted to go back to he was born in Rhodesia, as it was, Bulawayo, but Zimbabwe, and to a Scottish father and a Zimbabwean mother. So he was eligible for Scotland. I suppose I think there were sort of non-footballing issues that were behind his decision, and he left Cardiff, and he, according to Wikipedia, he played 4 times for Gillingham, 8 times for Crawley, and that was it then. It slipped into, well, Crawley were non-league at that point, actually. So I do agree with you. I think circumstances would have meant he wouldn't have played for that much longer for Wales, because he wasn't playing for anybody that much longer. But no, I agree with you. He was all action, and he was an absolute joy to watch. We agree also on second and first choice as well. So second choice is Dave Phillips.
Yeah, absolutely. Probably would have been number one a few years ago as well. Great player. He just came into the side just when I started going to games. He made his debut actually in the 1-0 win over England at the Racecourse in '84. And Mark Hughes scored on his debut in that game. And then, he played in the 86 World Cup campaign. He played really well up in at Hampden Park against Scotland. He played in the 3-0 against Spain. And so he must have been thinking at that point, oh, it's easy, this international football lark. And then a few months after that, it was a crunch game against Scotland at Ninian Park, and sadly the ball got absolutely hammered against his hand inside the penalty area. Really nothing he could do about, so it wasn't a deliberate handball, shouldn't have been given as a handball, wasn't a penalty, but the ref gave it, and Scotland went to Mexico and we didn't. But I think his international career lasted 12 years or so, 60 odd caps. And he played in a few different positions. He was club level, he was sort of goal scoring midfielder, but he often played as a man marker for Wales, or right wing back when Europe took over and changed the system to play sort of 5-3-2 or 3-5-2, however you want to call it. So he was versatile, and yeah, there's a lot to be said for, you know, just winning a lot of caps, I think, and really playing for Wales for a number of years, as he did. I have a lot of respect for those kind of guys.
Well, I mean, that's the criteria for me for getting Ricketts into the list.
Yeah.
I think what's interesting is if you think back to the players that he was playing with in that squad, in those sorts of positions that he was playing, he was competing with maybe, you know, Mark Bowen, or possibly Peter Nicholas, or Barry Horn, or
Robbie James.
Clayton Blackmore would have been similarly versatile. Yeah. I got the impression, certainly under Yorath, maybe less so under England, but that may be a memory thing, Yorath needed Phillips in there somewhere. And again, I think in the same way that Toshack had his loyalties to certain players, as did Hughes, you clearly got the impression that Yorath could trust Phillips. And, you know, just had to have him in the side somewhere.
I think he was a favourite of Mike England's as well. Yeah. I'll just read from the Mike England's programme notes for the Spain game in '85 at home. He said, "I asked David Phillips to do a marking job on Graeme Souness. The role's a little alien to him because he likes to go forward and create, but performed it brilliantly." I mean, Souness at the time, this is the guy who, you know, was the current European Cup captain, so this, you know, from Liverpool winning it in '84, so he was, you know, one of the best midfielders in the world, and Phillips just did a job on him, apparently.
On the cusp of going up to Italy as well.
Souness was the kind of the one of their, you know, players to be feared. I mean, they had some very decent players at that time, to be honest. That's why it was such a significant result to win at Hampden Park. We hadn't won up there for decades, I don't think.
And also scored a tasty volley. I've just dug it out on YouTube as you're talking, for Norwich against Crystal Palace. Oh, there's Eric Young, actually. Eric Young. There's nothing Eric Young could have done about it. But yeah, anyway, in that rather garish Norwich sort of speckled kit that they had.
Some arrows.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he's celebrating with Mark Bowen, as it happens. So yeah, no, I agree. Dave Phillips is integral to those sort of early 90s memories of Yoris side that I've got. For all of the Hugheses and the Rushes and the Big Nerves and the Saunders, you know, Dave Phillips is just ingrained in my memory as part of that team. And I kind of, he's one of the ones where, again, I you know, we've touched on it, don't want to sort of labour the point, but that notion of Anglos, non-Welsh, I've heard sort of Phillips speak. I think he did spend some of his childhood in South Wales, because I remember hearing him talk about how he used to go and watch, I think it was Bridgend RFC. It's no sort of suggestion that he didn't have a sort of a Welsh sort of identity about him, but he was born in Vegburg. No idea where it was, but it's one of those places. It was like St Asaph as a child. It was just ingrained on my memory because it was where a certain player was born, and you just kind of know it from that. And Vegburg was one of those places as well. So I think you're right. You touched on it, and I would agree with this, that until recently he would have probably been a number one in these sorts of lists. We both agree, and I've got to be honest, there's nobody's going to disagree with this, surely. Number one.
Someone try and disagree with this.
That sounded very threatening, actually. Yeah, number one, we've gone for who?
Ashley Williams, of course.
Yeah, by a country mile, really, isn't it? You know, notwithstanding as much as we both love Dave Phillips and as fond we are of Earnshaw and John Robinson, there's no competition, is it? He is, without question. And I think you make this. I think you make the point, and you sort of stole my thunder a little bit, because I've been thinking this for a while. I don't think he's not only, you know, the greatest sort of Anglo inverted commas that we've had. He's not far off probably becoming one of, if not our best centre backs ever, which is a massive claim to make.
Yeah. Well, look at what he's achieved. You know, look at defensive record in this last campaign. Was it 7 clean sheets out of 10?
Mm.
4 goals conceded, 10 games, you know, which sort of came from nowhere, really, because a defence was pretty awful in the last campaign. And yeah, okay, to be fair, he was part of that as well, but it takes time for players to mature as international footballers. I'm not saying he was awful when he started or anything like that, but I think he's just grown in stature. Well, you know, just he's at club level as well. He's just he's getting better, and there might be even more to come from him. If you look at people like Cannavaro or Tony Adams, Martin Keown, these guys played their best football, these, you know, centre backs as well, played their best football in their mid 30s. So maybe Ashley Williams will be at his peak in another 4 years or so. I think he's 31 now.
Except he's hinted at the next World Cup being his last campaign.
I wouldn't be surprised if it is. I mean, that was another 2 years or so. Yeah, I mean, what way to go out if he does take us to the World Cup, you know, and as captain? I wouldn't begrudge him quitting international football then.
Not least because he came into the professional game relatively late as well, and I guess, you know, it is only a short career, and for him it's probably going to have to be a little bit shorter than most, given you know, you'd probably been about 22, 23 when I think he was playing at Stockport. So yeah, he's probably got to squeeze as much as he possibly can in terms of financially out of his career. And if he thinks that the longevity of his career is going to be enhanced by quitting international football and the travel, then so be it. And I don't think we could. I certainly wouldn't begrudge him if he did that. I think it would be great to get another campaign out of him. But it may be that we begin to see him get rested more and more for friendlies. Because his appearance record, his ratio since making his debut is phenomenal. I mean, he's missed something like only like 6 or 7 games in 8 years. You know, that is remarkable for a centre half who, you know, it's only good sort of saying, you know, he's lucky with injuries, or, you know, he's an athlete and he's fit. You know, those players pick up reds and yellow cards as well. So, you know, you'd expect him to miss more games through suspension as well. And he's only ever missed one game through suspension. So, you know, he's not lost form. He's not lost fitness, and he's kept his discipline. That, you know, that's really phenomenal for a centre back. You know, we talk of, you know, strikers not picking up yellow cards and you know, goalkeepers not missing games and things like that. well, you know, that's more understandable. For him, I think it's a phenomenal testimony to his fortitude, his consistency, but his discipline as well. And that's really, really important when you're going into a campaign. We've talked about the yellow cards and how we've picked them up and whether we were silly in picking them up or whatever. That's going to be really, really important because, you know, we need our best 11 on that pitch for those three group games. You don't want people picking up red cards. You certainly want people picking up a couple of yellows and missing. Because we're going to need all those qualifiers to get out of that group, I think, that the critics used to have because he's, you know, not Welsh or because he played for Swansea. I think they've been well and truly silenced. And
that's all gone away now, really, hasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. He's great with both feet. He's great in the air. He's great in the ball. I think he's really important for us in an attacking sense, in terms of getting the ball quickly and early into the likes of Allen primarily, but also, you know, Ramsey, or even for that matter when we've had King or Edwards having to hold. He's important in getting that ball, recycling that ball and getting it forward again. That's often overlooked. I think if I would have a criticism, I think he could be more of a threat in the opposition box at set piece.
Should have scored against Andorra before Ramsey scored. He fluffed that header.
And he fluffed an even easier one against Bosnia.
It did, yeah.
Yeah. So I think he's, you know, and he hasn't scored a huge number for Swansea either. So I think if there is something he can improve on, then it's that. But I feel a bit churlish in kind of picking those things out of Ashley Williams, let alone a centre back. So there we are. We are unanimous. He is our greatest. We agreed on this. Our greatest Wales player born outside Wales.
Absolutely, but just. An interesting thing, and a reason I hope he does stay on for a few more years with Wales, is that his partnership with James Chester is superb. And if we're doing this in a few more years, maybe 5-6 years down the line, there's every chance James Chester could be in that top 10 as well. Warrington born to a mum from North Wales, I think. Yeah, the Chester Williams sort of Anglo Welsh partnership at the centre of our defence is absolutely superb, and I hope it remains in place for a couple more campaigns.
I couldn't agree more. This is probably quite dull in the extent to which we've agreed with each other, but there we go. I don't think there's a huge number of arguments, but around these, maybe, as I said, the more sort of 5 or 6 or 7 to 10, you could have chucked a few names in a tombola, and, you know, on another day I'd have gone, yeah, I'm happy with those as well. So it's one of those things. We couldn't find room for the likes of Simon Church. We couldn't find room for people like Marcus Browning. And I just thought of if people are disagreeing with this list, I mean, good
Paul
luck
Marden,
in
Paul Marden.
Paul Marden. There's no Jeremy Goss. I think had injuries been more kind to him, I think possibly we'd probably see Jack Collison in that list.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Collison, I should have mentioned Collison maybe in the intro to the blog I wrote, because he would have absolutely been in there, I think, with an injury-free career.
Yeah.
Because of his quality, yeah.
We mentioned a couple of Evanses in dispatches, Ian and Paul. We mentioned Paul Trollope. A couple of these are born in Oswestry, which
Paul Evans, yeah.
Part of the world, you know.
People who know him, yeah.
All right, okay. That sounds cryptic.
His friend used to go out with him, I think, yeah.
Let's gloss over that one. We couldn't find room for Dave Partridge. We couldn't find room for Lewin Nyatanga.
Oh, he's kind of throwing his names out. People who've won loads of caps. I've almost forgotten it, bizarrely. Nyatanga must have won 30-odd caps. And he's just absolutely... I mean, he's probably still only mid-20s, but he's nowhere near the squad, is he?
No, he's not.
He's dropped out of consciousness.
There's a link I've put at the bottom of your blog to a list on a Wikipedia list of all the players born outside of Wales, and it is... It is brilliant to look at, because you look at it and you think of, Craig, I remember him. And Steve Morrison is there. There's the two, Rob Edwards, Daniel Nardiello, who was, you know, a great white hope because he happened to be on, I think...
What about Freddie Eastwood?
Freddie Eastwood, yeah.
Blistering start to his international career.
Yeah.
And then nothing, like, you know, four goals in 10 caps or something, and that was it.
Yeah.
He probably got one of the best goals to games ratios of any Wales player.
Yeah, and absolutely. I feel on a bound to mention Alan Nielsen, because Howell from our lot has always had a rather odd obsession with Alan Nielsen.
Is there any particular reason for that?
I think it's because he noticed sort of when he was sort of young and going to games, he was born in Germany, and it gave him a sort of an exotic quality to him, and that, you know, Germany were good, and if he's German born, then surely, you know, he was going to be like the Welsh Mateus or the Welsh Klinsmann or something.
He's no Dave Phillips.
No, he's more the Welsh Uwe Rosler or something like that, I'm sure. But he's got this odd obsession with Alan Nielsen, so we'll mention him. George Berry was another German born Wales international, who certainly had the best afro that's ever played for Wales.
England. I play for Wales.
You will probably get some people who would argue for Boas Myhill. I certainly won't be one of them.
He was raised in Oswestry as well. He's another where I know people who know him.
Oswestrian, is that the word?
Yes, yeah.
Oh, it is. Oh, there we go.
His mum is from Llangollen, though, I think.
Right.
Which is how he qualifies, but born in
America.
California?
Yeah, yeah.
Not for me, Russ.
No. I'm with you on that one. And likewise, Ben Thatcher. I'm still embarrassed that we capped at all.
Rich has got a bit of a thing about Ben Thatcher, I think, hasn't he?
Yes, he does. Well, we'll leave him to air that one and try to explain it away. No Rhys Weston, no Darren Ward, no A.D. Williams. Now, A.D. Williams was a player I did kind of wanted to put in there, but really couldn't find the grounds to. He could have been a great centre-back, but injuries just did for him. And he always looked a very classy centre-half when really we didn't have that many classy centre-halves.
True. It was funny because he was under Gould. I remember he played quite often, even if he wasn't playing at club level, because Gould really rated him.
Yeah.
And he was struggling for games at Wolves or Reading, wherever he was at the time. And but he was a regular pick for Wales in the late 90s. Not a bad player. Could have maybe made the list if he'd won more caps.
Yes, he only won 13, and he scored also, albeit barely. I think it was like by millimetres did it cross the line against Denmark in that game that Barnard set up Bellamy. There's a certain sort of fondness just for that.
That game was bizarre in that we scored two goals, but I think only had one shot on target because it was just a header in the box that the keeper kind of threw through his legs.
Yes, I'm pretty sure there was a meeting beforehand in the car park about that. Listen, it's lovely. My wife is home. I will have to ring off because she will have work for me.
Same here.
Been a pleasure, Leon. Catch you again.